Mike Parsons and I were talking on Sunday about the fact that the book of Habakkuk is just as relevant as if you were to pick up the newspaper today and read it. It's really that, it's that kind of a book. Because Habakkuk deals with the kinds of questions that modern men ask all the time and for which men seek answers. Is God in charge of history? Why is there evil in the world? How can a personal, loving God allow bad things to happen to me and to the people in my life? Why is this world such a mess if there's a loving God? These are questions that are all answered in this small prophecy. But I want us to think not just about what's happening in our society, but we also need to think about what's happening in our own lives, because I'm sure that every one of you has faced situations that seemed unjust or unfair. And so in this series, we're going to spend 4 weeks working through this little book, Habakkuk, and reflect on how we can respond biblically when things are hard, when things are not going well, when our life becomes filled with trouble. This is a topic that, for me, at least, I need to spend a lot more time thinking about. I wouldn't say that my life has been bad. I don't think that I've, you know, weathered more storms than the average guy. If we could create some sort of a scale, you know, that we could measure the quality of our lives, many of you have faced far more tragedy than I have. And maybe there's some of you that I've faced more than you. There'd be some sort of a scale. But to some degree, all of us are acquainted with trials and difficulties and troubles. There are men in this room who have really struggled financially. There'd be stories of trouble at work and unfair office policies and unjust terminations. Some of us have had medical and health issues that have impacted us and our loved ones. Some of us have faced the death of a child. It's not supposed to work that way. Some of us have gone through all of the turmoil of divorce. Wherever you are on that scale of that quality of life scale, we've all faced tough times. And we're going to face tough times again. And so Habakkuk, again, he's just as relevant as this morning's newspaper, because there are two things that are true of every one of us. First, every one of us can relate to the concept of adversity. We all experience the kinds of things, maybe not to the same degree, but the kinds of adversity that Habakkuk faces, we've all had it. But even more practically than that, all of us have, at one point or another, handled adversity poorly. Have you ever overreacted or tried to solve a problem and your actions actually made things worse? No. Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever been tempted to solve a problem by cutting corners or by doing something sinful? Have you ever felt guilty because you knew that you weren't responding to adversity the way a, quote, good Christian is supposed to do? Have you ever encountered something that actually made you wonder if God didn't like you anymore? So I think if we're honest with ourselves, we know that this is a topic where we all have something to learn. So let's jump in. You can turn to the book of Habakkuk. And while you do, let me just give you a little bit of background. Habakkuk was a man who was facing some serious issues in his life, and the things that he was seeing in his culture and experiencing in his life made absolutely no sense to him at all. He couldn't understand what God was doing and why God would allow these things to happen. Habakkuk lived during the time when Israel was in its last days of being a free nation. It was just prior to the time when they were going to be invaded and conquered. And so Habakkuk is living in the last days of Israel, prior to all of this happening. But Israel was a wicked and a perverse place at that time. The nation was characterized by social injustice. It was a violent nation. They had gotten to the point where there was a complete disregard for God and His Word. Evil was running rampant. The politics of Israel were corrupt. The religion, whatever religion was left, was polluted. They'd become idol worshipers. It was just a horrible place. And Habakkuk is the memoirs of a godly man's thoughts and prayers as he's living in this kind of a culture and experiencing and seeing all of this. And as we look at Habakkuk, what we're going to find is that nothing about Habakkuk's situation is going to improve. Nothing's going to get better for him. In fact, his God, when he prays to God, God is going to tell him, you know, things are actually going to get much, much worse for you. That's God's answer to him. But what's going to happen is Habakkuk will be transformed. Habakkuk will understand how it is that he is to respond and deal with all that he's seen. His situation is going to decline. His relationship with God is going to be strengthened and come alive. He's going to start out boldly and openly challenging and questioning God. And that's what we're going to see today. He's going to end up resolved that he's simply going to place his faith in God. He's going to reaffirm his belief that, yes, God is in control. And he'll end up actually worshiping God at the end. And so I think if we approach these next 4 weeks with hearts that are open to change, God can encourage us and equip us to be the kind of men who respond biblically when things start to go bad in our lives. All right, so let's get started. Principle number one. By the way, there's a handout on your table if you didn't catch that. And for you guys who have a lot of you, you're okay. Thank you. Principle number one, men sometimes have tough questions for God. The book of Habakkuk opens up with Habakkuk praying. And as I read these verses, I want you to pay attention to how it is that he speaks to God. Just consider his tone, consider what he's saying as he talks to God. So chapter 1, verse 1, the oracle that Habakkuk the prophet saw. Then verse 2, O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. The law is paralyzed. Justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, and justice goes forth perverted. Well, let's stop there for a minute. He's obviously struggling, and he has some of these tough questions, but how does it strike you that he would talk to God that way? Right? But I think Habakkuk is giving words to thoughts and feelings that we've probably had. Have you ever wondered why it is that God allows bad things to happen? I have wondered that. Why did God allow the unrighteous man to get my promotion? Why did God allow my child to die? Why did God allow my wife to leave? Why does evil seem to prevail in our culture and the righteous are being squashed? Why does all this happen? And what's God doing in the midst of all of this? Life doesn't always make sense, and we struggle sometimes to understand and to cope, and we end up having these questions about why God allows this and how could this happen? So one key truth, I think, that we can learn from Habakkuk as we go through this is that God can handle our tough questions. If you look at the types of questions that Habakkuk asks of God, you likely find that you have some of the same frustrations. Habakkuk is frustrated in verses 2 and 3 that evil was prevailing. And so he levels these accusations against God. God, how long do I need to keep pointing out this violence to you before you do something about it? Why are you idle, God? Why are you doing nothing while wicked prevails? These accusations. Habakkuk doesn't seem to doubt God's ability to intervene, right? He's assuming that God could do something, but he's accusing God of being idle and not doing anything. The fabric of society was unraveling. Violence is on the rise. Righteousness is on the decline. Violence is everywhere, and God is sitting idle. How can that be? In addition, at the end of verse 3, Habakkuk is frustrated and he's weary from the strife and the destruction that he sees. And it is frustrating. And it is tiresome. When you're dealing with relationships that are contentious, when you're dealing with strife and turmoil and all of these things, whether that be in your professional life or in your home life, your personal life, wherever it is that you're facing that, it takes a toll on you. And it can actually turn into a vicious downward spiral where things just keep getting worse and worse and worse, and it's almost like it's hard to get out of that. It's hard to get out of these cycles. We need God to intervene. We know that we need his help. And Habakkuk knows that he needs God's help, and God's not doing anything about it. He's praying and praying and praying, and nothing's changing. And of course, he says he's frustrated from the injustice that he sees in his culture. He says in verse 4, the law is paralyzed, justice never goes forth, the wicked surround the righteous, justice is perverted. And, you know, we can pick up the newspaper and understand that, I mean, we can relate to this, right? Because we're starting to, we see this and we experience this in our own culture. Have you ever been in a situation where the person who could help you actually made things worse for you? Have you ever heard of a judge in our society making a ruling that helped the wicked and hurt the righteous? Have you ever read the newspaper and concluded that your lawmakers just passed an unjust law or a wicked law? Have you ever had an employer act unfairly toward you? Right? We experience these things. And when people who are in power abuse their power, help the wicked prosper, suppress the righteous, it seems like there's little that the people who are not in power can do about it. You feel trapped. You feel hopeless. That's what he's experiencing in the nation of Israel. Habakkuk's problem was that God wasn't intervening. God wasn't doing anything about this. After he's praying and beseeching and asking God to help. And so I think my question from this first principle for you is this. Have you ever had some of these kinds of questions for God? Have you ever wondered, why is God not doing anything to fix this or to solve this? Have you ever wondered, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to the people that I love? Have you ever thought, how long am I going to ask for help before God finally does something to help me? Well, with Habakkuk, God decided to go ahead and answer. And Habakkuk learns that things are actually going to get much worse. And it's interesting because, you know, for you and I, when you and I ask God for help, we usually have in our minds what that help should look like, right? We pretty much know what it is that God is supposed to do to solve our problems. We want God to fix things. And so if leaders are corrupt, the obvious solution is for God to raise up godly leaders. That's what he's supposed to do. If there's turmoil and strife in your home, the solution is for God to bring peace to my home. If your wife has cancer or your child is sick, the solution is for God to heal your wife and heal your child or heal you. Bring about a successful surgery. If you need a job, God's job is to give you a job when you pray and ask for a job, right? So we come to him with these ideas. We already know what the right solution is, and we need God to do it. And I think Habakkuk was probably the same way, right? God, listen, there's this violence, you need to stop that. There's injustice, you need to solve. All these things that God is supposed to be solving for him. He needs help. He asks God to do something. And God's response to him is really surprising in verses 5 through 11. And that's principle number two. God sometimes has surprising answers. His first answer is this. I have plans that you don't understand. So this is now God, starting in verse 5, God is now speaking and responding to Habakkuk. And he says this. Look among the nations and see. Wonder and be astounded. For I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if I told. Now, I think the important words in that verse are, I am doing a work. Because Habakkuk has been wondering, why is God idle? Well, maybe even where is God? But certainly, why is God doing nothing? Why is he idle? And God says, I am here. I am active. You may not get it. You may not understand. But I have not left the situation. I'm active in this world. I'm active in your life, whether you see me or not. And so one of the things that we need to understand is that God is never idle. Even though Habakkuk accused him of that, it's not true. God is never idle. Our issue is that we can never understand, or we can't always understand what God is doing. Now, I was thinking about God's reply to Habakkuk. And have you ever asked somebody a question and they said, you know, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. Or you wouldn't understand if I told you. That is a very unsatisfying answer. You wouldn't get it. Well, try me. That's how God replies. If I told you what I was doing, you wouldn't even believe me. You wouldn't even believe it. you're just going to have to wait and see, because it's going to be so astounding for you to believe unless you see it. So another key truth from Habakkuk, I think, is that we're simply not going to be able to always understand God's ways. We're simply unable. We can't always understand what God is doing. But in verse 6, this is where things really start getting dicey for Habakkuk, because not only does God do unbelievable things, but God's second answer to him is, I do things in unbelievable ways, and I use unlikely means to accomplish my goals. So look at verse 6. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans. That's the Babylonians. All right? I'm raising up the Babylonians, that bitter and hasty nation who will march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. God says he is raising up, or he is empowering, the wicked Babylonians. And God was right. This is unbelievable. Israel is marked by evil. They have turned their back on God. Their society and culture is in decline. They're morally bankrupt. And here's godly Habakkuk, who's living in this mess, and he's praying to God, and he's begging God to rise up and to stop this violence and to bring about justice and to send revival to the land. And God's plan is to raise up an even more wicked people and empower them to come in and conquer. His message to Habakkuk is that things are about to get much, much worse for you than what they are right now. So what kind of an answer is that? And you've experienced this, right? You've asked God, you've prayed about things, and they've actually disintegrated and gotten worse from there. That's happened. We can understand this. The doctrine of God's sovereignty teaches us that God is in control of everything, that God is in control of the good, the bad. And when it seems like God is not paying attention, we know theologically that he is and that he's involved, but he often works in ways that we wouldn't. He often does things that we wish things were different. We would have done it a different way. We would have preferred God that God had done it another way. But it's important for us to understand that whatever's happening in your life today, things might get worse, things might get better, but either way, God is aware and God is involved. And Habakkuk needs to learn to trust that. Sometimes God's answer to you when you're facing hardship is, I have a plan that you can't really understand right now, and I'm going to be achieving my plan in ways that you may not understand and you may not agree with. Well, Habakkuk responded to God like I probably would, because he found God's reply to be completely unsatisfying. God's answer to Habakkuk actually raised more questions, which leads to principle number 3. We don't always understand God's ways. So Habakkuk is going to speak again, because the news that he just heard does not comfort him In fact, it raises more questions. It raises more concerns. Habakkuk has asked God to do something about the wickedness in Israel, and God's answer is that he is going to send in an invading army that's even more wicked. And somehow that just doesn't seem right to Habakkuk. How could God possibly raise up Babylon to conquer Israel? How could that even happen? So Habakkuk presents God with some more questions. And these questions reveal three more ways, I think, that we can't always understand God's ways. Habakkuk's first question reveals to us that sometimes the things that you and I are experiencing seem contrary to God's power. Here's what Habakkuk says in verse 12. In response to this news that God is raising up Babylon, Habakkuk says, "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, the Holy One? Are you not the Holy One?" He's perplexed. If God is the eternal, all-powerful, sovereign King of the universe, if all of that is true, how is Habakkuk supposed to reconcile God's power with God's plan? God's ability to do whatever he pleases with this plan that Babylon is going to be raised up. If God can do whatever he wants, why would he rely on Babylon to accomplish his will? Why not just fix Israel? It's a question that we all have. Think of the worst situation that you've ever faced, or at least the one that comes to your mind right now, and ask yourself this question: could God have prevented it? Is God strong enough to have solved it for you? And then this question: why didn't he? Why did he allow you to face that? Habakkuk is having this struggle. Things are a mess. I've asked God to help me, and God is going to make things worse and actually send an invasion, and that just doesn't sound like something God would do. It doesn't sound like a powerful God acting according to his holiness. If God can do something about it, shouldn't he? And that's his next question, where we learn that sometimes what we experience seems contrary to God's nature. Habakkuk continues in verse 13, "You who are of purer eyes than to look on evil or see evil, and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up a man who's more righteous than he?" Habakkuk acknowledges God's right to do as he pleases, but why would a God who can't even look at evil without being repulsed by that evil intentionally raise up this wicked nation to come in and devour his own people? Why would he do that? Isn't God advancing the very thing that he opposes when he does that? Sure, Israel's wicked. Sure, Israel is corrupt. Sure, the religion is polluted. Sure, the politics are a mess. Sure, all of this is true. But isn't Babylon far more wicked? Isn't Babylon much, much worse? How could God raise up Babylon? Shouldn't God choose the lesser of the two evils? Wouldn't that be the right thing to do? Habakkuk, he can't resolve this. He just can't wrap his mind around this because it seems to be contrary to God's nature. This just doesn't seem like something God would do to Habakkuk. He has even one more question for God. And this question reveals that sometimes what we experience seems contrary to God's justice. So verse 14. In verse 14, Habakkuk writes a little parable. Right? So he writes this parable, and in this parable, he is kind of painting a picture of Babylon. And the Babylonians, the Babylonian war machine, Habakkuk writes this parable of like a man catching fish in a net. Right? So here's the parable. Verse 14, you, speaking of God, make mankind like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no ruler. And then verse 15, he's speaking of Babylon, brings all of them up with a hook. He drags them out with his nets. He gathers them in his dragnet, so he rejoices and is glad. Right? So Babylon is just like this fisherman or this boat, this trawler with a net, and he's just gathering all the fish in the sea in his net. Then in verse 16, therefore, he sacrifices to his net, and he makes offerings to his net, for by them he lives in luxury and is rich in food. You see the picture? Babylon does what they please. They conquer at will. They're gathering all these up. And then when they have victory, who do they give the credit to? They give their credit to the net, not to God. They worship and pray to the net, to the war machine, to their power, to their might. And so that's the parable. And then here's Habakkuk's last question. Is he then to keep on emptying his net and mercilessly killing nations forever? How can that be just? Babylon does whatever it wants. It captures people at will. And when they win, they give the credit to their own skill, to their own war machine, to their own might, their own power, to their own false gods that they pray to. Just like today. It just doesn't seem to make sense to poor Habakkuk. Yes, God is in control of history, and he understands in the back of his mind that everything that happens is according to God's will and God's plan, but things just, it's just not fitting together. The things that God seems to be doing things that make no sense. God is allowing things to happen that seem completely upside down. God's ways are sometimes confusing and hard to reconcile with what we think about God and His nature and His justice. Now, I know that this seems like a really odd place to stop, but this is where we're going to stop. Because we can just spend the next week just sort of reflecting on what Habakkuk is experiencing. All of this is going to get resolved in Habakkuk's mind. But between now and then, just reflect on the fact that Habakkuk is facing the kinds of issues and the kinds of questions that we face every day. These are serious issues and serious questions. And I think it would be helpful for us to reflect on our own lives and on our own circumstances and on our own culture before we start to resolve things. So here's some things to think about. What are some things happening in our culture that you think God should be stopping, God should be solving, God should be dealing with that? In fact, we're even praying that God would deal with that. What is it that's happened in your life that makes you wonder, why would God allow that? How could He do that? What are your questions for God? Now, I would suspect that few of us are as brazen as Habakkuk, right? We're not going to necessarily verbalize things the way Habakkuk. I mean, he is... Yeah, I was about to use a slang term that I shouldn't use. But it takes a lot of guts to pray this kind of prayer that Habakkuk is praying to God, just to talk to God this way. And, you know, but it's, instead of throwing Habakkuk under the bus, I think we need to understand that these are the same kinds of things that are rumbling around in our minds as well. We just don't say them the way he says it, because we're a little more polite because we live in the South.
Yeah.
No, that's true. That is true. Well, God can handle our tough questions, right? God can handle our questions. God understands that we have questions, right? God's not surprised by the fact that Habakkuk is struggling with this. In fact, God's going to lead him through a process of helping him understand. God gets it. Habakkuk is going to have to do the only thing that he can do, which is to wait patiently for God to watch, for God's plan to unfold, and wait patiently for all of this to start to happen. And I think that we may never get to the point where all of our questions end until, you know, this side of heaven. I think we may never get there. But one thing that we can experience is that our questions for God never need to turn into despair or doubt. That's one of the things that we're going to learn. And I also want to leave you with this thought, that knowing the future would not eliminate your questions. I used to think that if I could just know what was going to happen, it'd be better for me. If I could just get a sense, God, if I just knew where this was going, maybe that would help me. If I could just know what was coming, if I could just know when my sorrow was going to end, if I could just see the future. And that's not true, because Habakkuk sees the future, and what happens? It makes things worse for him knowing this, because, wait a minute, that's not the future I envisioned. The future ends up causing even more questions because it's not the future that he wanted. So God reveals things to us at times that he knows is appropriate for us to know them. But we have this idea that if I could just understand the future, knowing the future does not eliminate our questions. So I want to end today with us just sort of feeling the weight of what Habakkuk is experiencing and try to put ourselves in his shoes, try to relate to him. He has problems, and God doesn't seem to be helping him. You've experienced that. His society is marked by increasing wickedness, and God's not doing anything about it, apparently. You've experienced that. God is taking him through a period of time that is unpleasant and hard, and Habakkuk can't understand what God's doing, and you can relate to that because because you've had that too. Habakkuk has some hard, honest questions for God. And so, what questions do you have? Think about that, and then we'll start to resolve it next Wednesday.